SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201 Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. And of course, when we adjourned yesterday at noon, very fast moving and very difficult news and reports and reaction throughout the industry and elsewhere, to the indictments of 27 individuals, some thoroughbred, some harness, some suppliers and veterinarians. And if you've had a chance to read through everything, the day was greeted seemingly with tremendous angst and kind of tortured reactions, but by all rights, it was something that really should be encouraging to people as opposed to discouraging. For those that had talked for however long about a way to stop cheating and stop those from taking an edge and utilizing undetectable methods, well, we should be absolutely energized by this. And in fact, I talked to a number of people yesterday after 12 that have been involved for years in the game and more and more frustrated, and they all greeted this despite some of the horrific details and the humiliations involved and the embarrassment. The confirmation of anybody's worst suspicions. This is a positive development, because if there's a way to investigate to the extent this was investigated and identified and followed through and everything that came with it, well, then there's obviously a way to stop those that are cheating. And shouldn't you be excited by that? I mean, obviously, everybody, you would hope, the vast majority, I used that word, I think, yesterday, the vast majority of stakeholders and horse players want a level playing field. They just want everybody operating honestly and, with the same tools at their disposal. And you would have to feel like this is a circumstance. I think I said, as ugly as it is, it's a shift potentially. Not potentially, it's going to have to be, for the follow-ups and for the, the deterrent factor and from every angle. I think for any number of people that, look the other way, a lot of owners expressing shock and dismay. Well, okay. I suppose But there's any number of aspects of this that are going to, you know, be felt in many, many directions. And also raises some questions that'll be, you know, that'll need to be answered about, what can be employed to, to help the equine athlete and what can't. I mean, that's one of the sidebars that we'll examine. Here's the way we'll approach the first couple of hours here. And Matt Hegarty is standing by and is going to join us from the Daily Racing Forum. And Matt, from, the earliest, moments of the story, will be followed with a commentary from Andy Beyer. Andy has been, for his whole career, really, but especially, the late portion of his career has, been very vocal and outspoken. And, the concept of using speed figures to identify, performances that don't make sense. So we'll have Andy. Graham Motion is going to join us, and Alan Foreman as well. And Alan will discuss, some of the things I just brought up about the path forward and, the benefits and what, what can be used going forward to improve the landscape and maintain the landscape and so forth. Andy Serling with his regular Tuesday visit, and Andy and I had an interesting conversation about what this means to the horse players and, how much damage the, the cheating does on the horseplay side, having to use horses that you wouldn't, that you shouldn't have to use, the depression of prices, multi-race wagers, the damage to races and race cards, where horsemen, where honest horsemen just don't want to run against outfits that, win disproportionately and win taking, taking an advantage. And so much to consider, and we'll do it in a rational and orderly fashion. Matt Hegarty joins us from the Daily Racing Forum. Matt, good morning. Thank you.
Morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I appreciate the work that went in yesterday, and of course, having to dig through the four separate unsealed indictments and deciphering the specifics, connecting the dots between, the principals, and obviously for thoroughbred purposes, the George Navarro and Jason Service elements, and, the veterinarians and the tech companies, et cetera, involved. Talk about from the opening, your awareness and then how the story unfolded as you developed it.
Well, I think, the best way for people to try to understand this is to look at it as an operation that targeted, say an illegal drug operation. It was top to bottom, from manufacturers to distributors to users. And I think that's the best way to do it. We say 27 people were indicted under these four unsealed indictments, and they're really at every step of the process here. So I think that's the best way to look at it. Yesterday morning, I, like a lot of people in the racing industry, started getting texts very early in the morning saying that there were FBI agents at multiple barns at multiple tracks. Those barns were identified as Service and Navarro, and shortly thereafter, I think it was 10 o'clock that the U.S. District Attorney's Office in New York unsealed those four indictments, which, obviously contained some very troubling allegations.
Understanding everything, and of course we were on the air yesterday, and so I just was kind of relaying things as they became evident. And the first and the largest indictment that included, I believe, 19, the first and the largest, a 44 page, and I got a copy of it in advance of the video presentation at the second district the way in which it was the press conference was presented, and we would have listened in, but the video was not smooth enough to use. So read the thing afterward, Matt, and you know, try to, for the best of everybody's understanding, try to put your arms around the, you know, the major specifics that people need to understand.
Well, I think the major specifics would be that Jorge Navarro was apparently at the center of all of this. There are multiple intercepted phone calls between him, distributors, trainers, and vets. And one of those trainers is Jason Service. The common thread between both of them is that they were using a substance that was identified as SDF-1000. It is marketed as some sort of miracle substance. That horses in both of those barns were routinely given the substance. It looks like that the substance was being used well before race day, at least from the facts that we have in the indictment. We don't actually know what this thing does. It has been identified and tested by racing regulators in the past, but there's also questions about whether or not there might be two substances, one that is distributed just to Annie Joe, and then another substance that might be manufactured for a different purpose and is identified as that as well. So I think there are some big questions there. Now, in Navarro's case, there was a litany of drugs that he referred to using his own nicknames. They were identified as being perhaps pain blockers or blood builders. Obviously, there have been a lot of rumors about people using microdoses of blood builders to increase horses' ability to process oxygen in much the same way as professional cyclists and other professional endurance sports athletes have done in the past. So as far as knowing the exact substances or what was in them, I think that's still a big question. And you just do know from the conversations that were intercepted that both Navarro and Service believed that these drugs were doing a job on their horses.
Obviously, if anybody that's had a chance to dig through these materials, there's specifics that are and horses that are jumping off the page. For Navarro, XY Jet, and of course a cardiac incident at the age of 8 claims him, but from every indication, you know, he had been the center of, you know, any number of you know, applications of whatever Navarro, you know, was using at any one time. I mean, you know, certainly a horse that, you know, that had a long career and, you know, lots of time off several times, but kept coming back. And you know, when you fold in the Dubai element of this, the Golden Shaheen win, I mean, he competed in, I think, 3 of them. That part of this, I thought was quite notable that he was able to, you know, use this internationally.
Yeah, it's pretty clear in the indictment that that XY Jet and other horses were being given this substance. But like I said, we don't know the exact timing of it yet. In Maximum Security's case before the Pegasus, they said that the SGF-1000 was being administered on or about June 5th, which was about the same time that New Jersey regulators pulled an out-of-competition sample from him. The race wasn't until June 16th, but I do believe, and I hope I'm not wrong on this, I was going over some other stuff this morning, but I do believe that they intercepted a phone call in which Navarro said that he was administering these substances to XY Jet while he was in Dubai. So, you know, it does appear as the district attorney said, that this, you know, stretched around the globe. But I think there are still a lot of questions to be unraveled as far as the timing and once again, what these substances were.
Well, and that part of it, I mean, it'll take, I think it'll take a lot more examination, as I referenced actually as you were coming on. And I even noticed it yesterday, because one of the names that caught my eye immediately in the major, you know, in the 44-page indictment was Mike Kegley Jr., who he and his father are the principals of MedEvet. And about, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe four or 5 years ago, they advertised and we presented all kinds of veterinarians from the development company in Australia and from Europe. And when you say that, as Mary Scalay was quoted and also Dr. Arthur, when he was asked about it, you know, the product had been tested and there had never been anything about it that was identifiable as a performance enhancer. And so for what has transpired subsequently, and when I saw them, I saw SGF-1000, I said, that's all that is a, you know, like an enriched, a blood enrichment product. And so something, as you suggested, something is yet to be gleaned about, what it was, because, I mean, it's a widely merchandised tack shop product. The other stuff, the off-label, and we should note, Matt, and I want you to speak to the misbranded and adulterated, labeling aspect, because this indictment does not include anything regarding, altering the outcome of a sporting event. It's basically taking the same tack that the feds ended up using with Murray Rojas in central Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point to make. We're going to be kind of exploring some of the parallels, hopefully, between that and this today. And it is important to note what the actual charges are in this case. The charges in this case, Jorge Navarro and Jason Service have been charged with a count of misbranding and distributing adulterated drugs. That is the one count they are facing. It's a maximum sentence of 5 years in prison. So there has to be, and let's go back now to MedEvet and the other internet pharmacies, which I'm almost certain is where this investigation started, which would be a good idea to start an investigation, considering how notorious a lot of these compounding shops are. They advertise spectacular claims for drugs that they manufacture. In testing a lot of those substances in the past, regulators have found that they don't include the ingredients that they say, nor do they have the effects that that the marketers say they have. Now, that's not to say that they aren't manufacturing real drugs with real performance-enhancing effects. But this is a aspect of the industry that should have been brought under the microscope more a long, long time ago. The problem is that racing regulators have limited budgets. They're all operating in a single state, and they don't have the resources to go after these things and cross state lines and track all the shipments like the FBI and the district attorney's office did in this case. But that is a very murky world out there with the internet pharmacies, and it's just not clear yet, what exactly they're distributing and whether or not there are multiple channels from those pharmacies to trainers and vets.
Well, and when you talk about, when you say notorious internet pharmaceutical operations, the name Scott Robinson, jumped off the page, actually, as well, when I opened up one of the links. Scott Robinson's name has been associated with, the horseracemeds.com, type URLs, and the specific indictment against him and his partner, Scott Mangini, they cite back to 2011. I mean, I've heard Robinson's name a million times in the last 15 years. We should mention the mother and daughter indictment, Sarah Izaki and Ashley Leibowitz, who clearly were involved in a sting in a you know, in an undercover sting. And then the fourth one, Lou Grasso, Donato Polesino, Connor Flynn, and Thomas Guido. This is Harness. You know, there's a lot of standard bred crossover in here. But, of course, for our purposes, you know, the presence of Navarro and Jason Service, you know, just towers over the story at large.
Yeah, and you had mentioned it earlier in your kind of synopsis of what you're going to talk about today. But you know, Jorge Navarro and Jason Service, especially Jason Service, is the trainer of Maximum Security. That's going to draw most of our attention, being the thoroughbred publication. And as you said, those two have performed some rather spectacular training stunts over the last 5 or 6 years. Horse players were aware of it. Even horse players who may give trainers the benefit of the doubt when they sat down to put together a trifecta or a pick three, mm-hmm. or pick four or pick five or pick six, you were factoring in the possibility that one of these horses could jump up 15 to 17 points, even if you didn't like the horse. So the focus on that for us, for DRF, with our audience being horse players and people in the industry, you know, is warranted, especially considering all the questions that were surrounding these two individuals for such a long time.
Well, and we should include as well Marcos Zuleta, you know, who trains, and Mike Tanuzzo, who longtime assistant to Bruce Levine, and recently having gone out, you know, more and more on his own. And, you know, the vets included in here, most notably Christian Ryan, who at one time worked for Jim Hunt and came up in the Rudin Riddle training program. Alexander Chan, also another vet, Seth Fishman, a vet. And we mentioned, you know, the supplier side of things. I suppose we should also note Henry Argueta, who has been the New York based assistant for Jason Service as well. And, you know, some other, you know, there's other names involved that are lesser, you know, lesser known in and around thoroughbred racing. You know, one thing in some conversations, Matt, that I had since yesterday and after reading through the principal indictment, the way the overt acts are listed, and the way the, you know, off-brand products are being cited, they fall into essentially four categories that we had this conversation just last week with Dr. Alday and Mark Cassie and Cassie's clenbuterol editorial. And it, essentially, products that are essentially trying to duplicate the anabolic effect of steroids. And they focus, if you read through consistently, on stamina, muscle building, lameness or inflammation, and bleeding. And this is the laundry list of you know, things that are dealt with.
Yeah, and I would add blood builders to that as well. The you know, and that's one of the interesting things here about, you know, say the cocktail of substances that these horses might have been given and what the interactions may have created in the horse's body as far as getting that anabolic effect. Like I said, we don't have a whole lot of, you know, great information on what these are because there's only one that is actually identified. Others are just put into those classes of either nerve blockers or blood builders or anti-bleeding medications. So we don't know the chemical formulas or the ingredients in these substances that were given, and I think it's a pretty big hole for people that want to get into the nitty-gritty as far as what exactly was being done.
Let's also, you know, talk about the origins of this, because what, you know, as I said at the beginning, what people that, you know, people have been hoping for and you know, very much, you know, eager for is, you know, a watershed event like this that you know, two names that have been more than whispered, obviously, about, and stopping, you know, operations like this, it has to be, I would think, I don't know how you can't be encouraged that this was able, you know, to happen. I mean, to be, you know, to be executed this way. It I would like to think that people, you know, should feel like this is something to build from.
Yeah, I would say I'm in that camp. Overall, I think this is a good thing for the industry. As long as the most basic facts in the indictment are true and provable by evidence, yeah, I would think that this is a good thing. The world of cycling had to confront this as well, and there was similar lag time as far as. Building a case against Lance Armstrong, as there was in this case. Like I said, these guys have been putting up just spectacular numbers for 6 or 7 years now. And the fact that you had to go through what appears to be at least some of these things in the indictments, as far as the standardbred horses, go back to 2016. You wonder if there isn't any crossover from the Pennsylvania investigation, whether or not there was an informant there, or what I think is most likely, that they started finding out where this stuff was coming from, tracked it back to the different pharmacies, got a search warrant there, or some sort of judicial authorization to start tapping phones. So I think ultimately, this is a good thing, but all horse players, and I think everybody in the industry, should take this as a learning opportunity to say, how do we administer justice or put together these investigations in a much more timely manner, because it has been going on for too long. And like I said, you know, indictments definitely put all the truth in there that the prosecutors want you to hear, so we don't know the full story yet. But if these charges are true and accurate, I think that the racing industry should want to be able to put together these types of investigations on a far more timely basis, instead of having horse players in the industry. And horse owners too. I read something about, you know, Terry Finley being angry because he has to compete against these guys all the time, and has to lose races to them. That the industry should want to put in place a structure, whatever that is, that can mimic the processes and investigative tools that were used in this case.
Well, and that that aspect. It's interesting that this comes in fairly, you know, short order from the learning or the suggestions from that Asian conference, and this came up last week with Mark Cassie as well, in the clenbuterol discussion. The boots on the ground concept, and the old TRPB, having, you know, whether the Pinkertons or, you know, the undercover aspect. And I want to tie in, hoping to get an opportunity to talk to Sean Smealy, who is the Jockey Club's representative in Washington. And it does appear that, you know, some of this originated, Matt, with the Five Stones investigation that the Jockey Club initiated.
Yeah, I got that release late in the day. I didn't have time to talk to the Jockey Club about that. And I saw that some people were drawing lines between that and this investigation. And I just want to caution that I don't know from my reading of the statement whether or not that's what they were saying. So that is something that, you know, is on my list for today, making a call to them to kind of clarify what that statement read, or what that statement meant. I'm sorry. And just see what connection, if any, there was to that. So, you know, that's something that we do hope to report on here in the future.
To get back, I mean, on that topic, the concept was, and the statements included from that conference, that, you know, testing alone is not going to be adequate, and this is the reason why. I mean, if people are using products that are undetectable, there's got to be a different method, and that's what is encouraging about this, that that there were tools at the disposal of the FBI and the district attorney of the second district in New York that exposes this. I mean, that's what, whether it's going to act as a deterrent, Matt, or whether it's, you know, the first of other types of, other types of prosecutions, et cetera, it should have a desirous effect.
Yeah, you would hope this would act as a deterrent for sure. You know, no matter what the outcome of the trial would be. But I think also when you read through the indictment, it makes it pretty clear that these networks are probably difficult to penetrate without some sort of judicial authorization. Just from the conversations that were cherry-picked in here between Navarro and other people, including Service, they seem to be reluctant to talk about this over the phone. It does seem like some of these things were administered to horses well before they raced, and that out of competition testing samples were unable to detect anything in there, in those samples. But there's still the question as to whether or not the out of competition tests were unable to detect anything in the samples, because the chemistry of the substance was so good and still was efficacious, or whether or not there wasn't really anything in those substances that was efficacious. Mm-hmm. It is really tough to find out, because these things are manufactured in backyard operations. The people that sell them and market them make spectacular claims about what they can do, without any science to back them up. They're not regulated by the FDA in most cases, because they don't include ingredients that would need to be regulated. It falls in kind of that human supplement area that you might find it. I think the store is called GNC or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there are still big questions about there as far as the adequacy of testing. But the point that you need boots on the ground is obviously well taken. These networks have learned to operate in secrecy. You need people who not only know where to look, but know what to look for. And they have to be in a lot more places than on the back stretch of a racetrack.
Yeah, and that part of it, as you read through and just, understand all the dot connecting that's involved. Matt, what are the next steps for you, for coverage, and for the various aspects of the story to follow? We've got, the dribs and drabs fallout that Dave Grenig and Mike Welch, and undoubtedly, I know Steve Anderson is at Cheltenham, which opens today, but, West Coast correspondence with Brad and Jay. But what are the other, tangential elements of the story that we need to be aware of?
Well, I think we're going to just keep going forward as to where this story leads us. There are multiple avenues to look at. I think any connection between the Pennsylvania investigation and this investigation is worth having a look at. Trying to unravel how the investigation started and where it led from there would be an interesting story. I don't know how gettable that story is right now. We'll look at what happens to the Dubai win. We don't know. There is nothing in the indictment that says that maximum security, the Saudi win, that maximum security had received an illegal medication prior to the Saudi win. There is no indication in the indictment that he had received one prior to the Derby win, despite the fact that they do have information on the horse being administered SGF 1000 prior to the Pegasus, which was, what was it, a month and a half later. So there's multiple avenues to go down, but, you know, I hope our readers do recognize that we're working hard and we're going to try and find out as much as we can. But this is, I think, an evolving investigation as well. I'm sure that the feds are looking to turn a few people here that are indicted. There will be more, absolutely, I think. So we're just going to do our best here over the next couple of days to provide our readers with information.
A couple of the things, you know, all of the horsemen involved in yesterday's indictment, all of the horses that they had entered, you know, through essentially Friday, those are all obviously scratched and coming out. And I know from Pat McKenna's statement for NYRA that the horses in the care of Service and Tanuzzo have to be redistributed, and haven't heard specifics on that front yet from the Stronach Group, and there's still several parties, obviously, that are not just in positions, Matt, to respond, but are also at some awkward cross purposes, including Dennis Drazen, who employs Jason Service, as well as Michael Dubb, as a NYRA board member, who has extensive dealings, and you know, that part of this story has seemingly, I think, taken root. You know, the ownership side, I think generally being at this point assailed from people that are rolling their eyes at the shocked response from those parties.
Yeah, I mean, look, horse players have had doubts about this, you know, for years and years, for the performance of these horses. I do understand where some people are coming from on that. There would seem to have to be a willful ignorance. Horse owners are not, by and large, stupid people. But, you know, if a trainer is winning for you, you know, there's the old saying that you never ask a man to believe something that his paycheck depends on, or believe something to, I mangled it, but you understand.
Yes. Sure. Yes.
But yeah, I think that definitely the accusation of willful ignorance from some of these owners, it probably lands feet first.
Well, Matt, appreciate, you know, what goes into this, and having to, you know, distill, I mean, just a wide array of information and legalese, but you've been doing that a long time.
Well, I appreciate the kind words.
Matt Hegarty, DRF Hegarty, and between Matt's reporting in the paper and DRF live updates, and Matt on Twitter as well. Let's take a first break this morning. We'll continue to look at this from as many angles as we have available. We're going to have Andy Beyer join us next. And Andy, you know, has been outspoken for years. And, you know, as somebody who is a figure maker, has had a tool at his disposal that, you know, points out performances that don't make sense. And spoke to Jerry Brown last night as well. And, you know, Jerry, you know, has explained and has discussed that, you know, that he's met with the Jockey Club, you know, many times trying to assist in a program of using the figures, his figures, to, again, point out performances that are just, you know, unexplainable. And, of course, the risk you run here is that, you know, there's always going to be, I wrote this yesterday, there's always going to be circumstances where, when it comes to claims, let's say, you know, Horseman A is going to be able to extract a better performance without chemicals from a horse that from Horseman B. So it's a whole nother involved topic, but anxious as always to hear what Andy Beyer thinks and his reactions. Steve Crist, can't get to Steve today or tomorrow, but we'll get to Steve very soon, because in situations like this, Beyer and Crist are invaluable. Let's take a break, first of the morning. Later, we'll talk to Alan Foreman, Graham Motion, Andy Serling, and more. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
I thought I saw a girl brought to life. She was warm, she came around, and she was dignified. She showed me what it was to cry. Well, you couldn't be that girl I adored.
We're back at the races, 15 to the top of the hour. Just finished with Matt Hegarty from the Daily Racing Forum to provide as much background as possible from yesterday's indictments and the way the story was written for the paper. One thing we'd love to look forward to in the paper, in the forum, or in the Washington Post would be Andy Beyer's written commentary. And maybe Andy will go to the keyboard, but for now, very pleased to have Andy Beyer provide us reaction and thoughts this morning in person. Andy, good morning.
At the races.
Thank you, Andy. You have been as outspoken as anybody about those that try to take an edge. Your reaction from yesterday?
Well, this the indictments yesterday, I think, help confirm what horse players have already known for decades. That the use of illegal drugs in racing is the major problem in the game, and it's pervasive, and that the industry, on its own, hasn't done anything to combat it. I've been writing about what I described as the super trainers since the 1980s, when Oscar Barrera came on the scene and performed feats that were that just defied all the norms of a sport. He would claim a horse, run him back 5 days later, and the horse would improve 10 lengths. I mean, he was the leading trainer in New York for 4 years, with just dealing with cheap claiming horses. And I think Oscar sent a message to the industry that there were drugs out there that could indeed perform miracles. And just over the years, we've seen we see trainers come and go who wake up horses who perform feats that just defy all common sense. I've focused a lot of my attention over the years on the racing at Gulfstream Park, where I think the supervision of the sport has probably been consistently weak, and we've had a succession of people like Frank Passero, Kirk Zadie, Marty Wolfson, etc., who for a time were the greatest trainers of all time. And I think, even before what happened yesterday, if you talked to any horse player at Gulfstream who's like paying attention to what's going on, and said, are there any big, is anybody obviously cheating here, they would take 2 seconds to say, well, you have Navarro in service, and many of them would give you a third name, which I won't mention because it wasn't part of the indictments. But everybody recognized that Navarro in service, had some kind of an edge that didn't make sense. I mean, I'll tell you what obviously I pay attention to speed figures when I'm looking to issues like this, but my main focus in kind of deciding whether trainers are legitimate or not is looking at a couple key percentages in their statistics. I mean, I've always thought that a trainer who can win 20% of the time, is a really outstanding trainer. And if you look at current guys who are active now and are in the Hall of Fame, Steve Asmussen is like a 20% winning trainer. Bill Mott, 21% for his career. Bob Baffert, a little over that. Over the last 5 years, Jorge Navarro has won with 29% of his starters. Jason Service, 28%. You mean these guys just came from out of nowhere, and they're better than Bill Mott and Steve Asmussen? I don't believe it. The statistic that, for me, is even more revealing is a trainer, one you can find at the click of a mouse in DRF Formulator, is a trainer's winning percentage the first time off a claim. I mean, when one trainer can consistently improve on horses, like not over a long period of time, but it's overnight or in the first start since claiming them. When they do that consistently, it certainly raises my eyebrows. Well, Navarro was over the last 5 years has won with 24% first time off the claim. Jason Service has won 35% in his first starts after a claim. I mean, that's impossible. So, we all knew that what these that kind of are suspected, what these guys are doing, and as a journalist, I had an opportunity to talk to to interview the trainers, to talk to racetrack owners, to talk to stewards. And Steve, you made a comment earlier that the stakeholders in racing want a level playing field. I would say they don't want a level playing field. The people running racetracks just didn't want to rock the boat. Stewards didn't want to rock the boat and have a big scandal on their hands. I mean, owners flock to these trainers who have the worst reputations. I mean, do you think Gary and Mary West, were regretting the lack of a level playing field when Maximum Security won a $20 million race 2 weeks ago? So there's, there has really been no great emphasis, within the industry to try to clean up an issue, which I think all the customers recognize is problem number one.
Well, no, well put. Do you sense, Andy, that given the way this unfolded, and obviously we're still going to wait to hear some of the underpinnings and some of the impetus for the investigation, and of course, the feds can't get phone taps without wiretaps without some probable cause, and with I think you still right even after the Patriot Act, you still have to present some things to get a wiretap going. So we're going to wait and see how that unfolded. But I mean, to me, it feels encouraging that a method was employed here to uncover all of this and to to really expose this. That to know that this can work this way feels like a model for for further.
Well, on the one hand, work. It is encouraging, but on the other hand, it what we learned yesterday underscores the magnitude of the problem. I mean, maybe I was just naive, but when I saw a trainer who was working miracles on a daily basis, I always assumed that maybe a guy like Navarro was okay. He's an unscrupulous trainer trying to take an edge, and he had a vet who was always also ready to take an edge, and so the trainer and the vet were working together and they were cheating. Well, that was such a simplistic view. I mean, when you read the indictment yesterday, this was a major criminal conspiracy. I mean, this wasn't just, just a couple of scuffling racetrackers, trying to do something illegal. I mean, I've got underlined one of the sentences from the indictment, and it said the participants in this scheme manufactured, purchased, sold, shipped, delivered, received, and administered at least thousands of units of performance-enhancing drugs issued by pharmacies pursuant to invalid prescriptions provided by veterinarians participating in the scheme, and they customized PEDs created and manufactured by the scheme's participants. And they're talking about the Navarro doping program. It says these efforts include the use of false names to ship or receive PEDs, and the surreptitious disposals of the bodies of the horses that have died on the property of Navarro and his co-conspirators. I mean, this was a kind of a big deal with, again, 27 people indicted. But, people who were involved on, on lots of levels. And I always blamed the ineptitude of the racing industry for enforcing the rules and nailing cheaters, but to nail this took the Southern District of New York and a major effort by the FBI to come up with all this stuff. This was a huge investigative effort that would have been beyond the the capabilities of normal racing law enforcement. And the drug tests used in the sport are obviously inadequate. None of these hundreds of horses that Navarro and Service hopped tested positive for any for any obviously illicit substance. So it's the feds did a great job here, but how often can you expect an investigation like this to uncover the other cheaters in the game?
Well, and one of the names that came up yesterday from real veterans of racetrack observation was from the TRPB in its heyday, was it Paul Berube? And the litany of various fixing attempts and various over the years that TRPB uncovered, it would seem that this is a confirmation that that the backstretch observation and the Protective Bureau concept, the old Pinkerton concept, the use of the closed circuit cameras. There's no reason why there can't be a camera in every single stall on the racetrack. Of course, that doesn't help you with the horses that come in from training centers, but it does feel like the mechanics and the template for continuity in this area is out there.
Well, again, it's still, it's still such a, putting together a case like this when you read the, this lengthy indictment is just, I don't think the industry can do it. I mean, the industry hasn't done a very good job for the last 40 years, and now that we know how difficult it is, I had always been dubious about the idea of bringing an outside group like USADA, the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, into the sport, to enforce to investigate drug violations. Now I think that's a reasonable idea. One more observation I'd like to make about this. When I read the indictment, I knew the names of Service and Navarro, but all these other names of the co-conspirators, were very, I didn't know these people, and I started Googling them, and it was kind of amazing how many of them were from a harness racing background, and guys who had been kicked out of various harness tracks. I mean, this was, the backstretch was swarming with people who were already well established as cheaters. And I think that one thing the racing industry really needs to do is to have is to keep the bad guys out permanently. I mean, I mean Navarro and Service should, after they go to jail, which I hope they do, should never be allowed, anywhere near an American racetrack in any capacity. And some of these vets from the from the harness racing industry who wound up on the who'd already had multiple offenses and who wound up on the backstretch in Florida, get them out of there. I mean this is these people don't need second chances.
Now, the basis, Andy, for going forward, you wonder when it comes to the win percentage and when it comes to results, first off the claim and such. Obviously, not everybody that improves a horse is doing it through nefarious means. And how do the honest the honest sets of connections how do they stand up without being accused, whether it's placing stock or it feels like it's an invitation to accuse anybody that that has a number above a certain standard.
But when a trainer has a record that shows he is capable of improving horses almost instantly when he takes them over from another competent trainer and does that time and time and time again and year after year, he's a crook. You heard it from me. one other aspect of this that really stunned me. Watching the races in Florida and the other places they compete, wouldn't you have thought that Navarro and Service were arch rivals? I mean, they train the same kinds of horses, lots of claiming horses. They're probably claiming from each other. They're battling for the training title. I mean, they should be, arch rivals. Instead, they were partners in crime. Navarro would ask Service, "Can you get me this drug?" Service would tell Navarro, "Boy, I'm giving my SGF 1000 to all my horses. It's doing great." They were one of them texted the other to warn him when there was a racing official on the grounds where in the area where they hid all their illegal drugs. They were partners in crime. Well, if the two big trainers at a track who win all the races anyway are working together, what chance do you or I or the average horse player have to beat that corrupt game? It's that shocked me more than anything.
Well, and on that topic, Andy Serling next hour. Andy and I talked about that and about the benefit to the player to clear this out, and there's also benefits, obviously, you know, to honest trainers and honest outfits, sets of connections. Somebody suggested yesterday. They said, "Well, what is Monmouth going to do for horses when Navarro and Service sent out over 300 starters and they won 108 races between them?" And the suggestion to me is, it's a great opportunity for those that those that have been frustrated because they they weren't able to compete. And then when it comes to the horse playing side, the same thing. I mean,
horses aren't disappearing. Give them to honest, competent trainers.
Exactly. And you've got a chance to win. And I would imagine that that any number of horsemen that haven't been at Monmouth or didn't have a lot of horses there would be, the purses are going to be good at Monmouth, that they would want to compete there. And for the horse player, Andy, and Andy and I'll, Serling and I'll delve into this, having to use horses, extraneous horses from outfits that you have suspicions about, that's an expense. Then there's the depressed prices, that the short, short field, nobody wants to run against these guys. And as a result, you end up with small fields. Guys win at, 4-5, 3-5, and it depresses multi-race pricing and exotics. I mean, there's such a trickle down effect to this that, and it's all positive. And that's why I keep saying if from the start that this has got nothing but positive ramifications going forward.
Well, I hope so too.
Well, and I want to also ask for everybody the status of your leg. You had that bike accident up here at Saratoga, sounds like you're back 100%.
I rode 20 miles yesterday. I am back in form. Not peak form, but maybe a little SGF 1000 to give me a boost.
Well, we could then see you on a tour to something out
right
there. I got a question from a listener and our friend Otis. He's asking Andy about how does the industry treat the past Service and Navarro winners and the figures as well?
I don't know. I mean, I wonder if the folks in Saudi Arabia are going to pay the purse, to maximum security. I don't think you can go back and rewrite all the record books, but just get these guys out of the game and let their names be tarnished forever.
Well, and that they're not alone on that front. And I invite people to pick up any number of Andy's books if you haven't read them, because you certainly, I guess it's what is it? Is it in Picking Winners, or is it in My $50,000 Year at the Races, where you talk about a couple of fixing of.
My $50,000 Year at the Races was, we had a chapter on the Great Barrington Fair, which
yes,
was always a hotbed of low-level larceny.
Well, Andy, as always, appreciative and glad that we've got the forum for your thoughts, because everybody always anxious
for your
insight.
Good talking to you, Steve. Thanks.
Andy Beyer, everybody, and Andy has been, he's been outspoken on this topic for forever. I mean, if you pull up, any of the Washington Post, there's at least, and the Daily Racing Forum, there's any number of columns. I'd say once every 15 columns or so, maybe once every 20 columns, there would be a a missive in this direction. Always appreciative to hear from Andy, and we look forward to hearing from Steve Grist as well. Not today, but soon. Let's take a break. A little past 10, Alan Foreman, and Alan will talk about a lot of the nuts and bolts of this. And, you know, as I was kind of floating it with Andy, but what this is as a template going forward and as a deterrent and as a, you know, who knows? I mean, what the next chapters as well. I mean, there's certainly within the body of the principal indictment, you do see, you know, hints about unindicted. Is it unindicted co-conspirator, I think is right. Is that the term? And, you know, what that portends too. So we'll let Alan touch on a lot of that. But Graham Motion, who I thought, I mean, I, you know, went to write something or say something yesterday, you know, kind of a reaction. But it was Graham. I thought that what he had said, what he had, you know, tweeted was so succinct and just so perfect. You know, he said, a sad day for racing, but a long time coming, which Andy echoed. A good day for those who try to play by the rules. We'll all be better for it. Two lines, and I thought it said it all. Let's reach for Graham Motion. He'll join us next. We've got visits coming yet from Alan Foreman and Andy Serling. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Want an online tournament that boasts no rake, skim, or takeout with a $10,000 first prize? Here it is. Play ExpressBet Live online Saturday, March 21st. ExpressBet Live is for account holders only, with no registration or other pesky fees. Simply make a live $20 wager on one horse in 10 competition races. Earn the most and collect $10,000. Plus, there's from $1,000 to $4,000 in additional prizes. The top 30 finishers automatically qualify for the $50,000 ExpressBet Showdown. Sweep the card and earn a juicy $5,000 bonus. Don't have an ExpressBet account? Visit ExpressBet.com today and qualify for a $100 bonus. Then register free for ExpressBet Live, the best tournament value going. Play live online with ExpressBet Saturday, March 21st, and it could be your day, but only if you play. Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Public Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, Give them only the best. BRL Equine.
On Sirius XM Radio.
Your feet in the air and your head on the ground. Try this trick and spin it, yeah. Your head will collapse, there's nothing in it. And you ask yourself, where is my mind? Where is my mind?
We're back at the races. Some trampled by turtles. Graham Motion joins us, and Graham, one of the people that was contacted by any number of journalists covering the story yesterday, and as I said, as we were going off to the break after Andy Beier visited, it was Graham's, you know, very succinct and simple refrain yesterday that struck me as the right tone. An assessment of what transpired.